Throughout the history of the church, there has been a constant struggle between, we might call them the conservatives and the progressives. And the struggle goes all the way back to the time of Jesus and beyond, and of course both sides want to claim him as one of their own. The conservatives can be characterised as those who believe that there was a time in the past when everything was better. In fact, when everything was more or less as it should be. And so for conservatives, the goal of faithfulness is to steadfastly protect the legacy of that golden age where it still exists, and to turn back the clock and recover that legacy where it's been lost. Progressives, on the other hand, believe that we are evolving towards a better future. They say that God is always doing new things, and so old traditions and practices that keep us tied to the past are to be rejected. Only that which is new and fresh contains life and hope for the future. This long-time struggle in the church is, of course, mirrored outside the church. Particularly if you substitute the word moderates for progressives, you might immediately see how the same debate has torn apart the Australian Liberal Party and various other groups. And stand around any Australia Day barbecue this weekend and talk about the emerging changes in Australian society, and you will quickly see people polarise around these two instinctive positions. Is the golden age behind us and needing to be recovered and preserved, or is it before us, ready to emerge in all its glory if we would just clear away the rubble of outdated attitudes and practices? In tonight's reading from the prophet Isaiah, we heard God speak of people whose religion is nothing but memorized rules and traditions. People whose worship of God is just meaningless words and whose hearts are somewhere else. That sounds like a condemnation of the conservatives. One up for the progressives? But is it necessarily? If your religion is nothing but memorized rules and traditions, that's not good. But what if your religion is memorized rules and traditions and sincere affection, personal holiness, and an energetic action for justice and peace and freedom? What if the words are truly meaningful and your heart really is in it? The prophet doesn't say that you can't have both. Jesus addresses the question directly in the latter part of our gospel reading. Some disciples of John the Baptizer came to him and asked why his disciples don't observe the traditional patterns of fasting. Why don't your people follow the same traditions as us? And Jesus' answer, wrapped in this metaphor about weddings and bridegrooms, is essentially because everything has changed. The old ways don't suit the new reality. And then he goes on with two of his more memorable illustrations. You can't patch an old coat with a piece of new unshrunk cloth. If you do, the patch will shrink later and tear an even bigger hole than before. The inappropriate patch will actually make things worse. If you want another illustration of this sometime, you can pop up to Ian's factory and get him to explain to you the difficulties that they often have making allowance for the different rates of shrinkage in timber when they're manufacturing or repairing quality furniture, wooden furniture. He can talk about that for quite a long time, I can assure you. Jesus' second illustration is very well known, but probably not quite as well understood in today's world. He says you can't put new wine in old wineskins, or the skins will burst and the wine will be lost. Nowadays, in our part of the world, wine is packaged in glass bottles, but in the good old days, wine was packaged in not very vegan-friendly leather wineskins. And as the wine fermented and the gases expanded, the skin would stretch to its limits. and then eventually dry and harden. But a skin could only do that once, so if you put new wine in an old dried skin, there was no stretch left and it was a mess. So is Jesus then taking sides with the progressives and dismissing the conservatives? At first glance, it does sound like it. Everything has changed. The old ways don't suit the new reality. You'll have to find new containers for the heady new brew. He's certainly not against the progressives here, but maybe it's not as simple as one or the other. You see, the illustrations that Jesus uses are not condemning either the old or the new. He's not rubbishing well-aged wine in aged wineskins, nor is he rubbishing the patching of old coats. If anything, he's affirming the goodness of both, but warning us of the risks of attempting to mix the two in thoughtless and careless ways. Both old and new are worthy of respect, but you can't just keep slapping them on one on top of the other, because it's not going to work. When new things emerge and are worthy of welcome, the old ways will need to be carefully and creatively adapted, but that's not the same thing as saying that they need to be immediately thrown out. The old and the new can coexist in healthy, creative ways, but not without care, respect, and compromise on both sides. One of the things that is necessary if we're to learn to compromise faithfully like that is the humility to recognise and admit to our failings. The natural conservatives among us are too often unwilling to admit to the sins of the past. We want to hold on to an overly simplified, rosy reading of history. And the natural progressives among us are too often unwilling to admit that we can't foresee all the consequences of our exciting new directions, some of which will probably prove disastrous. We want to believe that the future that we are building is a glorious triumph of human hope, blessed by God with wonderful outcomes. In the earlier part of our gospel reading, we heard the story of Jesus' encounter with the paralyzed man. And it seems that Jesus took one look at this man and knew that he was paralyzed by his own guilt over the things that he'd done in his past. You know how that can happen. Serious guilt can increasingly cripple us in all kinds of ways, and in some cases can make it us increasingly unwilling and unable to even get up and do anything about anything. Left ignored and festering for long enough, guilt can literally immobilize us. And recognising this man as such a case, Jesus responds by addressing the cause rather than the symptoms. Take heart, mate. Your sins are forgiven. Jesus knows that when this sinks in, it will be enough to get this bloke back on his feet. But a group of angry religious conservatives immediately object to him presuming to have the authority to forgive sins. So he decides to prove the point by speeding up the process and telling the man to get up on his feet right away. And sure enough, the man gets up and walks. With the sins of his past dealt with, he is free to embrace a new, previously unimagined future. Now let's think about what these things might mean in the context of today's Australia Day, Invasion Day considerations of modern Australia's relationship with its First Nations peoples. Those of you who are here this afternoon can imagine that I was a little nervous because I wrote this before hearing what Uncle Dan would have to say to us this afternoon, but I think I'm okay. Not long ago, one of Australia's more famous conservative prime ministers steadfastly resisted calls to use the word sorry to Aboriginal people for their past treatment. And he condemned those who expressed a black armband view of Australian history. we elected a more progressive Prime Minister who then led the Parliament in making a hugely important national apology to the stolen generation, the First Nations people who had been forcibly removed from their families as children. There are not too many now who would deny that that apology was a good thing, but many of us want to hastily move on as though it's all behind us now. We desperately want the new patch on the old coat to hold without having to actually examine the coat and see how extensively torn it actually was. And we resent calls for further reckoning with the sins of the past. But apologising to the stolen generations does not heal the wounds of the earlier dispossession or of the hundreds of frontier massacres. Modern Australia is built on a legacy of violent dispossession and mass murder of our First Nations peoples. And the longer we allow that guilt to fester, the more it paralyses us. This is not just some theoretical justice question. It is about bringing desperately needed healing to our whole nation, black and white together. Jesus is offering to forgive our sins and to lift us to our feet. But we can't accept forgiveness for things that we're still in denial about. And so we remain paralysed on the floor. And conservatives and progressives keep pointing the finger of blame at one another to explain our ongoing predicament. If we can get beyond the finger pointing and face up realistically to the amount of blood that has been shed and the amount of cultural destruction that has been inflicted, we will probably find that we need the wisdom of both the instinctively conservative and the instinctively progressive among us if we are to find our way forward as a reconciled nation. If I may be so presumptuous as a white fella to try and look at this from the Aboriginal side, many of our Aboriginal sisters and brothers sound innately conservative in the way that they talk about the old ways and the traditional practices. They value and long for the legacy of thousands of years of culture that they enjoyed prior to the British occupation. But almost universally, they know and accept that there's no going back. Even if every non-Aboriginal person was evicted from the country, the experience and culture of First Nations people has been irrevocably changed. The coat can't be untorn. It will have to be wisely and carefully mended. And that doesn't demand a false choice between the old and the new. It involves both, brought together with care, respect, and creativity. Have you noticed how the present climate and bushfire crises have got people talking again about traditional Indigenous fire management practices? It's a great example of bridging the foolish conservative-progressive divide, because it shows how progressives seeking for a better future can recognise the need to creatively learn from the best of the ways of the past. In New South Wales, they've set up some all-Indigenous units in the Rural Fire Service, and those firefighters are drawing on the wisdom of the old ways. But they've got no plans to do away with trucks with water tanks on the back anytime soon. The new future utilises the best from two different pasts. Modern Aboriginal culture is very good at doing that, bringing those together and building those bridges. But even when those of us who are instinctively progressive get over our total iconoclasm and recognise the need to learn from the past, we are always in danger of doing it hastily and stupidly and ending up with burst wineskins and torn coats. Because the way forward requires careful and respectful listening and learning and creative compromise and partnering. That's true in our nation, it's true in our churches. The wisdom of Jesus is not confined to one realm or the other. It's not applicable in the church and irrelevant outside. It is for both. The wisdom of Jesus speaks truth into all our situations. It doesn't speak simple answers, but it speaks truth. And it invites us into a conversation and a journey of finding the path of faithful living into the future. Jesus calls us to neither conservatism nor progressive iconoclasm. There are times and situations that require more than one, more of one, or more of the other. And Jesus helps us to find the way. We have to faithfully reckon with the sins of the past and with the gifts of the past. We equally need to humbly acknowledge the inevitability of damaging sins in our brave new future without being paralysed by that awareness, but knowing that new times will need some new ways. We need to look to the unknown future with both hope and courage. Jesus has walked this way before us. As a nation, as a church, as individuals, now is the time to follow him in faithfully reckoning with both the gifts and the sins of the past, and follow him in welcoming and adapting to a new future that he is beckoning us into.